Hey, Bertel.
Good afternoon. Well, it's afternoon for me, but for you, it's like right on the midday.
It's noon, exactly noon.
How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. So happy to see
Yay, me too. And the obviously the listeners, the watchers can hear us having this little pre-chat, and I wanted to do that because we've had a lot of feedback that people love us together, because we love us together, let's
Oh,
face
so much.
it, so much. And we just want them to feel the love between us. And we chat very often, but we don't actually see each other on video very often.
No, this is true because we're normally walking.
Yeah, walking and talking. So, shall we dive in?
Absolutely.
Would you like to go first?
No, thank you. You can.
Okay, I'll go first. I've got literally looking on my Instagram from the story I asked, and I've got quite a few responses. So, the first one, we have chatted about it before, but I think we'll briefly visit it because it is a question by Krista, and she says, "What are our thoughts on weight loss medications?" Yes, so obviously that's Zempic, all the type. Well, I assume it's Zempic because that's the big one in the market right now. There are other weight loss medications out there. My thoughts on them, and I just want to make it clear that I literally am not judging anybody who is taking these because honestly, if I put myself back 7 years ago, I probably would be taking them too. So the mindset I was at, I would have done anything to lose weight. But knowing what I know now and knowing the root cause of eating disorders and the root cause of being unhappy in our bodies, it's not just losing weight is going to fix everything. It might feel like it will, and you might feel better to begin with, but it really doesn't. So I'll share mine and then obviously share yours. My view on it is it's not a long-term solution, it's temporary, especially if we're talking about Zempic or whatever it's called. There's severe side effects that actually people are getting money back on insurances now from the type of side effects that they're having. Yeah,
Wow.
with it. And it's not actually addressing the root cause. And this isn't me saying weight gain is an outcome of a root cause that we need to solve. But what I'm saying is the weight gain, someone being unhappy in their body, is an outcome of a root cause that you and I can both get to the root of in coaching. So, in my opinion, it's temporary with a lot of side effects and it can be expensive too. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, realistically, I suppose effectively, I did take weight loss drugs because I took laxatives all the time. And the side effects are horrendous. But it's searching for the I'll be happy when, isn't it? I'll be
Yes.
happy when I'm at this weight. And it's not sustainable. It's not. Happiness is not a destination. And so, sure, if somebody wants to do that and they really believe it's going to help them, then they're going to do it.
Yeah.
But finding out what is the cause behind being unhappy, and even choosing to realize that you can create your life rather than have it happen to you, and do that inner work and find out what's going on, which is obviously what we both do in coaching. That's going to be the long term. That's going to be the I am happy rather than I'm happy when.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely. So true. And again, just to clarify, I would have probably been the person who would have literally given my left arm to take this drug if it was going to, promise me with magical weight loss without me having to do anything. But, you live and you learn. And I never did that. It wasn't available at the time. I did take illegal weight loss drugs when I was in the eating disorder that had a lot, everything has side effects and they're not safe.
Absolutely. And the answers to everything that you think you're going to be happy when you have this income, when you have this house, when you have this car, when you get that outfit, they're just artificial goals, really. Then the happy doesn't come from owning something or being a certain weight or having a certain income. It comes from a choice and an acceptance of who you are.
And that's what we do. That's what we're all about. It's not a quick fix.
Oh God, no.
Journey, but it's the best journey. I speak for myself that I've ever been on and continue to be on, way better than when I lost weight and did have the abs and was doing the fitness modeling and all the praise. That felt great at the time, but I was petrified of losing it. There was never true happiness in the moment. There was fear, fear, fear everywhere.
Always fear, so much fear. And yeah, the journey to recovery, I think, just morphs into a journey of discovery, where you just get to look and find different things about you all the time. I mean, even yesterday, I learned new things about myself. So you're
I
laughing.
know what happened yesterday. Maybe you can share if you want to, because otherwise it's like an inside joke.
It is, isn't it? I will share, and I would have been so mortified by this, and I would have never, ever shared. I would never have told you. I would have just been so, so mortified and thought that, oh God, I would have just hated myself, thought everything was wrong with me. So what actually happened, my husband and I went for a walk in the New Forest, which is a huge national park near us. And we've got two dogs. And one of my dogs did a poo, and I bent down with the poo bag to clear up the poo, and my trousers split, like massively split. I heard the big rip and I thought, oh, bollocks. This was like 3 minutes into our walk. So I was like, immediately, actually, I had in my head, a voice from my childhood telling me, oh, that happened because your bum was too big. And that was the first thought that came into my head. And I just said to myself, well, then it would have happened to all my clothes.
Yeah.
And it hasn't. And my bum is my bum. And it doesn't really, the size of it is just the size of it. That's that. It's not too big, too small. It's just there. And so I stood up. Luckily, it was really sketchy weather because I live in England, and I had a rain jacket on that came down to just above my knees. So I was like, oh, thank goodness. And we were supposed to be going out for pub lunch and everything. And literally with every step I took, I felt these trousers rip more and more and more. And it started to get quite drafty as well.
Imagine.
Literally feel one arse cheek hanging out of my trousers for the whole of the rest of the walk. And then we went in this pub for lunch. It was all a whole mess up because we got trapped by a flood. Three pubs were full. It was just a day of disasters. But each disaster made me laugh more and more and more. And we ended up in this really, really posh, like gastro pub restaurant, which was really expensive. And we'd only gone out for a casual pub lunch. And so we decided to have a bowl of soup because we were in there and sat down. And Dave went, aren't you going to take your coat off? And I was like, no. By this time, I was worried that the trouser rip, because it had actually gone down to my knee. And I was worried that the trouser rip might be showing. But it is what it is, okay? Nobody, if anybody saw, nobody said anything. And you know what? It doesn't matter. It's just a pair of trousers. It says nothing about me. And it says nothing about my body size. They're just trousers, and it doesn't matter. And I was able to, instead of just saying, we've got to go home, and literally putting a stop to a nice day out, even though it was disastrous, it's funny disastrous, and it's memorable. And I was able to just enjoy the day and not be a victim to judgment.
Yeah. Wow. I love that you've shared, because so many people can relate to where they've perhaps done the opposite of what, or they would have done what you would have done before you chose recovery, like I would have as well. But you just used the tools that you've learned and just brought humor into it and actually thoroughly enjoyed. Did you enjoy the day?
I did, actually. Okay. It was funny. We laughed so much. I mean, we were literally, I had half trousers on, my bum was hanging out, we were covered in mud, we in this really posh pub, thinking, oh my goodness, all these people dressed in their finest and me with my bum hanging out.
And only ordering soup to try and save like hundreds of pounds.
I know, well, we already had a dinner at home waiting for us, so it was just going to be a casual lunch.
That's so funny. Wow.
So, yeah, no, we just laughed. And that's so different from what would have happened, because I wouldn't have even told Dave what had happened back in the day when I was in the eating disorder. I'd have said, I need to go home now. And he would have been like, why? I'm not telling you, I need to go home. And I'd have been really funny with him. And then I just would have come home and hidden for the rest of the day. And he would have had no idea what had happened, whether he'd done something to upset me or anything. He would have no idea.
Yeah. But
we were able to just laugh.
That's beautiful. Oh, all right. Next question. You go with one of your questions.
Okie dokie. Right. Let me have a look. Now, they're both, well, I've got three actually. One of them is just really lovely from Bri or Brie, who just says, this is not a question, but she just wants to thank both of us for everything we do to help people with eating disorders, which Aww. Is just so lovely for her to reach out and say that. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Brie.
Now, actual questions. How to stop moving all the time? I just can't sit till the evening or don't have, and I'm not going to say numbers, but a certain amount of steps done each day.
Yeah.
How to be okay with not moving all the time, really, basically. And that's quite a big question, isn't it?
It is. I'm being polite and holding back because I asked my question and went first. So
okay.
Space.
So logically, when you think about it, you know that when you're thinking in your rational mind, right, and not with the eating disorder thoughts, you know that you don't need to complete a certain amount of steps per day. You know that you don't have to keep busy. When you're being rational, you know that, but it doesn't feel like it. And I really want to acknowledge that logically knowing and feeling are very, very different things. And it feels like you have to keep going, and it feels terrifying, and it feels like somehow something terrible is going to happen if you don't complete this amount of steps. But check in with your logical brain, first of all, and ask questions around why, and is it true? And is it true for everyone, which is a biggie, because we're not unicorns, even though it feels like it. Feels like there's one rule for us and a different rule for everybody else. But when you have accepted and acknowledged that even though it feels this way, it's not, that logically you know it's not true, you don't have to complete this, then accepting with love and compassion that your feelings are different and showing up as your logical self to reassure the scared part of you that even though you feel this, nothing bad is happening and it's not true. And then there's no magic wand. You just have to sit in the discomfort and give yourself love and compassion while you're there.
Yeah. I agree with that. And then off the back of that, how can you support yourself in your environment to take that action or non-action, however way you want to look at it, to stop the movement? So number one for me was to get rid of my fitness tracker, which told me how many steps.
Yeah, really great point.
Or the phone, like I have an Apple, and I know, which I don't, because I don't care. I'm not scared. I just don't care. I don't go in Apple Health and see how many steps I've done today as I've been holding my phone, because it makes no difference. It doesn't mean anything to me anymore. So how can you protect yourself from actually knowing? Because there's going to be a counter somewhere. So get rid of that. If you live with someone, can you, you know, obviously I know you need to feel safe to share, but can you ask that person for help, whether it's This is a hard one because we tend to rebel against someone interfering with our recovery, right? Even if we want to recover. But if you can get outside help to support you to not, say, if you meet every day with one of your girlfriends for a walk for like an hour or 2 hours, share with them that actually, because you're in recovery and that's what you want, otherwise, why are you even here? We're going to be doing half an hour max walks. And so just.
Or meet for coffee.
Yeah, meet for food instead. Meet for coffee and for food instead of the walk.
Yeah. And that reminds me that when I was working with you as your client, you shared with me that you used to go to the cinema to practice sitting. And I started doing that because at home, it's very, very easy to distract yourself, to pop the washing out, to wipe down, to, you can find a million jobs and you can always find something to do. And you can sit down for 5 minutes and then get up and distract yourself again. But putting yourself in a situation like being at the cinema, where when you get up, you'd actually be disturbing other people and it would feel like a bad thing to do, is great practice to sit still. I mean, the first few films, I don't even remember what they were. I was so distracted by my own discomfort of, I felt like my skin was crawling. I just wanted to get up and get out of there. And I was just trying to focus on my breath and focus on staying in the chair.
Yeah.
And so it's just a practice of sitting still. And yeah, distraction to begin with when you're not wanting to do stuff.
And watching other people. Like I learned a lot from my now husband, Wouter. So I don't want to use the word lazy because that's literally the fear of what we fear is those that are in recovery. Wouter, my husband, he identifies as lazy. So it's not me labelling him lazy. He does. So, you know, watching him, although I didn't want to be like him because I did see him as lazy, not anymore. But watching him or other people actually just sit down and be okay and not fidgeting and not moving. And I used to have a stand-up desk and I got rid of that. I actually started coaching standing up. And I think I even shared, this was a few years ago, I shared that without me realizing it, because it wasn't conscious to me, that was an old ED behavior. I pretended, but I believed myself that it gave me more energy, it's better for the client. But actually, if I was to fully get honest with myself, it was so I wasn't sat down all day. So if you want to fully recover, which I'm assuming this person does, else they wouldn't have asked the question, the uncomfortableness is going to be there. I was going to start off by saying do it in small steps, but that actually prolongs it and makes it worse.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so just go cold turkey as much as possible. Support yourself with your environment. Get a coach so you can obviously share and then the coach can be like, I felt that too. This is what I did. Like the cinema example, great thing for bringing that up. And it is a case of, oh, it sounds so, I don't want to say just not moving, but it is that, but there's more beneath that, isn't there?
Yeah. It's allowing yourself to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. And choosing recovery, what do you want most?
Yes. Yeah. Because as you said, when you look around, other people sit down. Lots and nothing bad happens. It's okay.
It's a normal human behavior. And we're not saying don't take care of your body and don't do any stretching or don't go on a 20-minute walk in the sun to, like, you know, we're not saying don't do anything, but you know what's disordered and what isn't. And until you can separate that, you do need to stop, because otherwise the eating disorder will have a little hook on you and then you'll convince yourself that, oh no, it's because I want to, but really it's not yet, because you need to separate yourself from that and then you can start introducing normal movement back.
I stopped completely. I didn't even walk the dogs for a while.
Yeah.
And it was so hard. It really was. But I'd always told myself, oh, I'm just a really busy person. I just like to be busy. And I convinced myself, and I did believe it. I believed myself that I just had all this energy, and it was fine to be doing from 4 o'clock in the morning till midnight, every day, never sitting down. And now I've actually discovered I really don't like being busy all the time. And it was a false belief. Yeah. I really like having time to just be.
Me too. Me too. Right, let's have a look at my next question. Emma does say on Instagram, yeah, you are both amazing. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you, Emma.
Thank you, Emma.
And ML. Oh, it's ML. We know ML.
We do.
Exercise and hoarding. So she said it, you know, didn't really ask a question. But exercise and hoarding. Well, we've addressed exercise just.
Yes.
Hoarding was a big one for me, especially when I was more in the binge eating, which was still a form of restriction because I was restricting all week. And then it went from all week to all day because I couldn't keep up the weekly restriction. But I would literally buy, you know what word's coming, don't you? Chocolate. All different types. And I would hide them in my wardrobe and I would go and check on them and look at them. Look at them several times a day if I was at home, and just look at this stash that I had that I could not wait to literally sink my teeth into, pun intended, on the Saturday morning, which I used to wake up early so I could allow myself to then quote unquote binge for the weekend, then I'd start again on the Monday. So I definitely hoarded food. So I would go out every day and buy something to add to my stash because it was exciting to me. And this was because I was obviously starving myself. I was denying myself what I really wanted. And I enjoyed that excitement. I enjoyed the hoarding until the binges happened. And then, as you can imagine how shit I would feel, I would start all over again every Monday. So I did hoard food. I don't, because people hoard stuff as well, don't they? Did you hoard stuff?
So I did actually hoard food. Even though I didn't ever binge, I used to get very expensive chocolate and stuff, like all organic and pure. It was very orthorexic chocolate. And I used to hide it and I used to go and sniff it.
Oh, yeah. I used to sniff the wrapper. And
I never used to eat it. And sometimes I used to just like lock myself in the bathroom and just like open chocolate and just touch it and sniff it. And then I would throw it away because that was then contaminated because I'd opened it.
Yeah.
Which is really strange. So I kind of did and I kind of didn't hoard stuff. I hoarded clothes. So I used to buy so many clothes. I used to buy dresses all the time. Mm-hmm. And I would wear them once, maybe twice. Because, and it was all for validation. It was all for somebody to say, oh, I like that dress, or you look nice in that. And it was literally just for that. So I used to just keep on buying and buying and buying and buying to keep trying to get that bit of validation, that bit of something to make me feel good. Because I had no idea that you could self-validate, that it could come from within. It was literally did not have the clue.
Yes, I feel that. And then I would say hoarding in general, obviously being an expert, both of us, in eating disorder recovery, it's from scarcity.
Yes, scarcity. It's
from a place of lack. So whether it's toilet rolls, whether it's, I mean, I say I'm organized and I do, let's say bathroom cleaner, I'll have a few in the cupboard in case I run out. But I think that's logical organization. Whereas Walter will, let's say he's drinking milk, he'll finish the milk carton and then he'll be like, oh, we've got no milk left. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's why you like plan ahead and have a backup. But I know that people can hoard like in extremity, and that's just from a place of lack because the body's in a fear response, the body's starving, you're not getting enough. So to get enough, at least if you've got it in your environment and you can look at it and be around it. So a lot of people in eating disorder recovery or eating disorder, I know you did a lot of this, cook for other people, bake for people,
all the time, yeah,
all around food, but not actually eat it. But at least you're like smelling it, as long as it's not ice and sugar, because then you can't smell the calories. You're around the food, but you're not actually having any of it.
Yes. And also, I think that the hoarding, because you're living in fear, constant fear, the hoarding of anything creates a feeling of safety.
Yeah, you've got enough. It just
Yeah.
in case.
Yes. It just creates a feeling of control and a feeling of safety because you feel so unsafe all the time. So anything you can put out to make yourself feel safe, you will.
So true. So to let go of hoarding is to, of course, fully recover and to show your nervous system that it's safe without having a backup. Well,
Yeah.
without, being an organized person, it's safe to just actually consume what you're buying, and it's safe to live in food freedom and in self-love, and then all of that just goes.
Yeah. It does so much. It including like all the perfectionism, all of that, all the OCD behaviors that are related to living in the survival response just gently fade away.
They really do. There's no like extra work to do. It's all the same
Yeah.
work. And it's miraculous, isn't it? How, like when we started working together, and obviously you was a perfectionist, and I was like, right, put those pillows on the floor off the sofa and leave them there all day and go and look at how annoying they are to you.
I
Like,
tried to cheat, didn't I, first of all, by not going in the room where it was. And you're like, no, you've got to go and sit in there and look at them. That's like, no.
So all the things, like now, I mean, yeah, you probably like a nice sofa, but if a pillow is on the floor, it's just doesn't bother you because it's just a pillow on the floor.
Well, as I said back then, you started a trend and the dogs still put them on the floor every bloody day. So
You
they're
go.
always on the floor now.
There you go. And it's a good job you're fine with that.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I'm just like, oh, they exploded, jumped off the sofa again.
And so it gets you to recovery, gets you to a place of just peace. There's no I'll be happy when, because you get to be happy now. There's no I'll be happy when I've recovered in the perfect way, because you understand that recovery. I want to say it's not a lifelong journey, because it's not, because we're fully recovered. But what I mean by lifelong is you get to know about yourself, like in all these different ways that you couldn't if you were in their eating disorder, because recovery opens up so much more for you. So it is a constant journey of getting to know who you are as you live in complete food freedom and self-love. And everything just, fades away that doesn't serve you anymore. It's really cool.
Yeah, it is. And even the you said we get to choose to be happy. We do, but we also get to acknowledge and accept that nobody can be happy 100% of the time, and that it's actually okay to have all the different feelings and
Definitely.
be okay with having them rather than be terrified of feeling them.
Yes, because I can feel deep sadness and actually enjoy feeling sad, because underneath, like, the foundation of my state of being now is just peace and like fulfillment in a way. That's like the base layer of me. So I can feel sadness, grief, joy, but underneath it's just this peace and fulfillment. And happiness does come and go, but is a difference, isn't there, between being the fear and being consumed by it and literally wanting to die or crawl out of your skin, than feeling fear and actually knowing that I'm not the fear though, so I'm going to
Yeah,
be okay.
absolutely. And yeah, you can feel everything and it's okay. And that's part of being human.
Yes, exactly. Next question, lovely.
Thank you. Right. Well, this is from lovely Rita, who says, I am petrified of stopping restricting because I know I will then want to eat a lot and this scares me. And we had a couple of little conversations after this because I wanted to clarify on was it the eating a lot that scared her or what was the actual fear about eating a lot? And it was all the fears, the weight gain, the judgments, the not being happy in my own body, just all the fears, everything together, and underneath just not being good enough, not being lovable. So, this is I'm going to invite you to go because there's just so much to say.
There's so much. Well, first of all, good coaching in getting to the root, because before you went the extra mile, I would have then, of course, said, what's the real fear, though? Because the behavior is a fear, yes, but what's really going on? Because, and you've dug deeper, so you've done our work for us, right? The root cause is, yeah, if she did gain weight, if she was judged for what she was eating, she would feel like she wasn't good enough and they're therefore unlovable, which is the ultimate rejection for a human, right? Which could mean death, because as a child, if you don't love babies, they'd literally die. So it feels like death. So was it Rita?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Rita, me and Julia really understand how you feel right now. We've both been there. And so how would I start this is I would start by saying, what do you want? Because you get to choose what you want. Like, I know that some people in the depths of an eating disorder don't even know what they want, like don't feel worthy of knowing what they want. But if you get clear on what it is you want, and I'm going to assume, I know we shouldn't, but you're not here in front of us, that you want what Julia and I have: food freedom, self-love, like peace, fulfillment. So if you want that, I've said this a million times, but it's so key, and I needed to hear this a lot. You cannot get that unless you go through the fear. You can't. It's impossible. And what we try to do, I'll hold my hand up, are you to try to do this too? We try to avoid the discomfort of the fear as much as possible by trying to like go around instead of through, over, under instead of through. But yes, we can support ourselves through, but there's no way round, over, under. There's no shortcut.
There's nothing like that.
So first step, environment. People around you, like if Rita, you have a partner, can you speak to your, because I think you said one of the things she was scared of was it judgment from her partner?
Just judgment from others, just general judgment. I've no idea whether she has a partner or not.
Okay, so these people, I like to ask clients when they say something like that, who are these people that you're afraid, you know, like, are they people that you don't know? Are they just completely made up people? Are they like genuinely people in your environment, in your family? Like, who are these people that you're afraid of judgment from? And then if you can speak to these people, that, you know, this takes vulnerability, but vulnerability is, you know, great for your healing. Speak to these people and share what you're afraid of. Like, I'm wanting to recover. Part of recovery is following my mental hunger, my physical hunger. And it might look from the outside in that I'm eating a shitload of food. And I'm so scared about that. And I'm also scared of your judgment about that. So they don't have to fix anything. They're not experts in this, but just sharing your fears helps. Is that old quote, isn't there? A problem shared is a problem halved.
I haven't heard that for ages.
Yeah, it's a one-liner for a reason, right?
Yes.
So then set yourself up for support as much as possible. Get a coach if you're able to. If you're not able to get a coach, choose, I would say, because I made the mistake of choosing too many people to begin with, choose one or two people that you trust and only listen to their stuff, because you can get contradicting messages, can't
That's
you? From
great advice. Yeah, really great advice.
Yeah. And
again, you very definitely can get contradicting messages.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, well, I kind of am saying that our method works, obviously. I'm not saying nobody else's method doesn't work either, but they can be different. So you need to follow your heart, your intuition, choose one to two people max, listen to their stuff and content, and actually follow what they're saying, and obviously reach out for help as and when. And then the ultimate last thing is the only thing left to do is to face the fear and to eat unrestrictedly. And that's why working with someone is really key, isn't it? Because when you do that, shit hits the fan. But you actually, you've said this before, but it's worth me asking you to repeat again. When you started recovery, you said it in I don't want to say in a fat phobic way, because I'm then deciding that fat's a negative word. But what did you say that actually supported you eating unrestrictedly?
It was a very fat phobic way.
Yeah.
I was very fat phobic at the time. I said, I'm going to get fat and I'm going to hate it, but it's better than where I am now. So it is what it is. It's going to happen, and I'll deal with that as and when.
Yeah.
But right now, it was do or die at that time. It was just, my options were very limited, I felt. I hated so much where I was, and I had nothing left to lose, I felt. Of my, I suppose I did have a lot to lose, but I didn't feel like I had a lot to lose. I felt like I was at the bottom.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just did say, I'm going to get fat, and that's what's going to happen. And it was a kind of reluctant acceptance, I suppose,
yeah,
which did really help me.
That's exactly it, because right from the get-go, you weren't denying, you weren't trying to avoid. Because what, and I say we, because I did the same. We start recovery, but we don't want to gain weight, but we want to recover. And depending on where the person is, because I help women with binge eating too, and not, unless sometimes they lose weight, because depending on if they're weight restored, if they're over their set point, if they're under their set point, it doesn't mean everyone will gain weight. If you're in the depth of restriction and you're not binging, you will gain weight because you need to. If you're restricting, binging, purging, you may gain weight, you may stay the same weight, you may lose weight. But the point is to overcome that fear of weight gain is everything. And when you overcome that, which the only way you overcome that is by going through that fear, again, everything become, you can then eat unrestrictedly because you're no longer afraid of weight gain if it happens or if it doesn't happen. And so it is that domino belief, if you like, of learning how with the right support to get over that fear of weight gain. And it's more than just the way your body looks. You've already identified that core belief with Rita, and that's the feeling on fear of being unlovable.
Yeah, it's sort of, it feels like it's coming from all angles, doesn't it? The control, the being out of control of yourself, other people viewing you as out of control because you're having so much. So again, it's the judgment, and it is the feeling of, if I gain weight, other people are not going to accept me because I'm not going to accept myself.
Yeah.
But you're not, even if you say you love your body now, you're still not accepting yourself, because if you're restricting and you're trying to manipulate your body, you're not accepting yourself.
Nope, because you're restricting, you're denying your authentic self, and that's not acceptance.
So even if you're saying, I actually love this body, I've got the six-pack abs or whatever, if you're pleased with your body, I wasn't, you quite liked your body in the eating disorder, didn't you?
I did. Not but the anorexia, but the bulimia, definitely.
You're not accepting yourself. And you're not liking yourself. You're liking a manipulated, sick version of yourself physically, but you're not liking how that feels. So you have to change something to feel better. And that something has to be the thing that's going to take you towards the person you want to be emotionally, the person you want to accept, the person you want to love. And you can't accept and love yourself if you're not being yourself.
Oh yes, I want to say more, but I'm not going to, because that needs to end on that question, on that point. So Rita, I hope these words of wisdom and love have helped, because I've got quite a few questions.
Oh, just keep firing away then.
Okay. This is a quick one, so let's do this as a quickie. This is from another Yaya. What is the greatest pleasure with food today for each of us compared to before recovery? For me, the greatest pleasure now is that I'm actually able to enjoy food without feeling guilty after eating it. That's mine.
Just no fear.
Mm.
Just to not have any fear at all over food. Just that. It does, there's literally no fear. I can just eat. And that's the most incredible thing, because I never thought I'd be able to.
Yeah.
So that is a huge pleasure.
Huge. All right, next one. This is from Recovery with Shan. So she says, How to start finding your inner identity again when all you've known is an eating disorder as an identity? That's a big question too.
It is a big question. We actually did do an episode on this.
Yeah, so in the nicest possible way, what was it called? Because then I can
let
look
me
for
look
her.
it up.
Yeah.
I think it was Finding Your Identity.
Oh, that would make sense, wouldn't
I
it?
think it really was.
Yeah, have a little look, because I will then link that, because we go in depth with
We
it. I
do.
mean, we can answer it briefly now, but it would be better for you. You deserve for us to go in depth about that. So was it with Carla?
It might have been.
We'll find it and we'll pop it. Make sure you and I both make a mental note to not forget that. Hold on, I'm going to actually write a physical note.
Yes, it was Finding My
Oh.
New Identity. Yeah, and Carla was with us too. And it was on, I released it on the 26th of July, 2023.
So 26th of July. I don't know if I've got that one. If not, I'll just put.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, maybe it was before we collaborated.
Maybe, but I'll put that one in, yours in. So finding my
Okay.
because I'm in it.
It's episode
Starring
19
Victoria,
of
right?
mine then. Yes, with Carla and Victoria. Yes.
Okay.
So yeah, we did do a whole episode talking to that.
We did. So we'll
Because it
answer.
is scary, isn't it? It is, you just
Yeah.
know, I don't know anything except the eating disorder.
Yeah.
If I remember, we said the essence of what makes you you, the way you love other people, the way you care about people, the way you want to be kind, the way you have concerns and you show up for others, that stays. And that is who you truly are. That the love, the care, the wanting people to be happy, that's there. And it becomes part of you for yourself as well.
Literally words out of my mouth.
Ah.
That's exactly it. So that's who you are, but you
Yeah.
can listen to that episode and it'll help you. I don't want to override you, Julia. How many questions have you got left?
I'm done.
You're done. Okay, great.
Done.
So then we've got, looking at the time, this should be perfect. We've got three left. Oh, okay, that's a long one. Let me just wait that till the end. Okay, this is also a long one, but I think it's quite a quick answer. This is from Michelle. Hi, Victoria and Julia. I have a question around weighing myself. At the start of my recovery, it was decided between myself and my therapist that I would blind weigh. This wasn't that difficult for me to do. I know lots of people would find this hard, but I always hated seeing the number. So it instantly helped me moving forwards in recovery. However, 2 years on and a couple of different therapists later, it was suggested, and my tone of voice is going to change, it's going to be obvious what I think of. 2 years on, it was suggested that I start seeing my weight again to help me realize it's just a number and that it would be an important part of the recovery process. But this has been massively triggering for me and has slowly become an obsession again. Now regretting going back down that rabbit hole, with your experience, would you recommend not weighing myself, or do you see this as being part of the recovery process to self-acceptance and just seeing a number and it only being a number?
It's a number. What does it matter? Why do you need to know it?
Right? Why the
I
fuck?
don't know what I weigh, do you?
No. Why the fuck do you need to? And I get, okay, let me just rein myself back in and be polite. Why do you need to exposure therapy yourself with your weight to get used to it just being a number when it's like a huge fucking part of any kind of disordered eating and eating disorder
Absolutely.
hellhole life?
Yeah.
Why?
I cannot see any benefits. Through my recovery, I've had various times where I felt like I needed to know my weight. One time I got on the scales, and well, that was a really stupid thing to do.
Oh,
And it made me
was I
feel.
with you at that point? And I
Yeah.
was like, why did you do that?
I was like, I thought I could handle it. And I couldn't. And it made me feel awful. And literally, that was the power I gave a number.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean anything. And yes, I have had to be weighed. And I had to be weighed for a DEXA scan. And I asked to be blind weighed because I did not see any benefit in having, in knowing that number. And it exposure therapy for that, I can't see the benefit. For body image, for seeing yourself, because you cannot not see yourself, 100%, the more you allow yourself to be present with your own body, the more you get used to it. But the number, no, I can't fathom. A lot of therapists and stuff really focus on this, and I can't see any benefits at all.
I see zero, because I understand if, like you said, with your body, I understand if weighing yourself was something you have to do as a human every single day. Of course, it would make sense to then, you know, understand and learn that it's just a number. But because we do not ever need to know our weight unless a doctor needs to prescribe you with medication or, in a circumstance such as yourself, a scan, and you can still ask to be blind weighed and not counted on your weight, you never need to use it for the rest of your life.
No,
so
you don't.
There's stop weighing. So Michelle, glad you asked the question. You do not need to weigh yourself, because ultimately, when you take full responsibility for your recovery, you know if you're losing weight, gaining weight, just by knowing your body, your clothes. Yeah. It's not like you need it to, because some people say, I'm curious of your thoughts on this, Julia. Some people say, I'm not saying they're lying, but I've heard a few times, I weigh myself just to make sure I'm not losing weight. And I'm like, tell me more.
Yes, no, I have heard that. I've heard that quite a few times. And in very early recovery, if you are very, very underweight, like your physical health is at risk, your organs are failing, then there is a medical reason to know that you are not losing weight and that you are actually gaining. But you still don't need to know that number yourself.
No,
it
no.
can be blind weighed. Only your doctor or healthcare provider needs to know that number. So there is no need. There's,
no.
I mean, yeah, one of the first things we do to babies when they're born is weigh them.
But why?
I know, it doesn't really matter. Again, there is a medical reason to know that babies always lose weight after they're born.
Right.
And to know that they then start gaining again and that they are starting to thrive. But we just then seem to think that we need to know our weights, and we don't at all. It doesn't, there's no benefit. It's like, I don't know how many centimeters long my hair is.
Me neither. It's a lot. It's long.
Yeah, I have no idea. Does it make any difference to my life? No.
No, so true. There you go, Michelle. Right. Thank you for the question, though. Let's see. I'm going to leave the long one to a last. I think we might have time. Let's see. We've got about 15 minutes to answer two. So this is by RG. Little Chicken Handmade. That's a cute name. She says, okay, I was listening to your podcast on how to not feel guilty after eating things that are not on your meal plan. And I hear you saying, eat anything you like and your body will know what's best for it. But I'm not sure that's entirely manageable for everyone. If I lived on chocolate, I wouldn't be in good physical or mental health. Thanks for any feedback or referring me to podcasts of yours. I'm chomping at the bit. Can I answer this one first?
Yeah, I know. I can see that you're chomping at the bit.
Because I literally 100% believed that when I started recovery, because mine was different to Julia, I didn't start true recovery in the depth of anorexia. I started it in the bulimia, the binge purge cycle. So I honestly thought that I would eat so much chocolate for the rest of my life forever, because that's all I wanted to eat. And it was so scary for my coach to say, just eat what you want. And I'm like, that makes no sense. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my entire life. But when you trust your coach or trust the person in the podcast, like me, for example, that you're following, and you trust that process, when you fully surrender and follow your mental and physical hunger, as you're tuning into your body, so if this person isn't in full-blown anorexia recovery when they don't have signals yet, this isn't going to be beneficial for the person who's there. But for someone who's perhaps in the binge purge cycle, practice listening to your body, eat chocolate in as much as quantities as you want, add in meals. This is something I didn't do that now I recommend everyone do because it's beneficial, because you want to nourish your physical body. I assume you want to like feel good, have good digestion. Add in at least 3 nourishing meals a day that you actually enjoy and want to eat, and eat as much chocolate as you want in and around those meals. And that is not irresponsible, even though people who don't understand this work think it's really irresponsible for me to say that. Trust me when I say I tried every, and as a swear word, because I tried every fucking thing in the world to not eat chocolate in the way I was eating it. So I would get it out of the house. I would only eat it at the weekends. I would go on a different diet because apparently if I want chocolate, I'm craving magnesium and something else instead. Like I tried everything. The only thing that got me to where I am now, which is eating chocolate like a quote unquote normal person, whatever that means, is to allow myself to have it in as much quantity as I wanted it and to nourish myself at the same time. And trust your body knows how much and when it wants it. And over time, it will change because I had kilograms daily and it wasn't good for my health and I didn't feel good, but I started to add in meals as well, trusted that and kept allowing, didn't restrict because that would have sent me back to square one. And over time, I had like a normal amount of chocolate. So I hope my passion for this, I was stuck in this for like how many years? 20 years as an eating disorder, and about 15 of that was in this obsessive chocolate binge purge cycle. So trust me, that cute little Instagram name person, what I'm saying here, it's the only way. So I know I've said a lot, Julie, but have you got anything to add from your experience with clients with this?
Well, yes. Also, my own experience of once I did get hunger signals back in, I wanted to eat biscuits and I craved biscuits and I would eat them by the packet, quite often several packets a day, which for me, coming from the real restriction, felt so much, and it felt like it was too much. It felt like I was never going to stop, and I had a lot of shame around it. But I allowed it because I had a really great coach, and I did also have meals, as well as the biscuits, and it just faded away. And sometimes I eat biscuits and sometimes I don't. And I can go weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks without even thinking about biscuits now. But if I want some, I'll have some.
Would you say you have a naturally bringing some nutrition into it? Because I think this person's question is based a little bit on health and nutrition and wellness. Would you say outside looking in that now your typical diet without purposely dieting, but your lifestyle of food choices from a place of freedom is a nourishing, balanced way to live and way to eat?
100%. Yeah, totally. If I have a day of, let's say, beige food, which is easily done,
yeah,
I will actually start to think, fancy something like, a nice crunchy raw carrot or a nice crisp apple, and I start thinking and really fancying and wanting fresh unprocessed food. If I've had, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with processed food, it's only if I've had a lot of one thing and not the balance, then I start wanting the other. And so my body literally naturally tells me what I want, and I just have actually a very, very balanced diet now.
Same. And a prime example of this, yesterday we went to the zoo as a family, a great day out, and we had like a lot of people bought cakes. It was someone's birthday, so we had like cake twice, and we went to the cafeteria. I think it was, I had fries with pulled chicken and like spicy mayo, that type of food, which was delicious. Then on our way back home, I couldn't be bothered to cook when I got home, so we was going to order a takeaway, and we did. My husband Wouter wanted like a you know, like a doner kebab thing in like a wrap. I didn't feel like that, and I was like, I want, you know, when you came over and we had that panda bowl with like rice, that takeaway, I had that. So I didn't want the kebab, not because of any judgment, I just didn't, my body was like, no, it's not feeling great to have that. So I still ordered, but it was rice, cucumber, sweet corn, red cabbage, crispy chicken, seaweed, and like this spicy wasabi mayo over it. And that was just hitting the spot. It was perfect, because I wanted like the veggie type fresher stuff. So when you get out of your own way, after you've allowed this,
yes, you have to allow.
You have to allow. If you have natural balanced eating as a goal for recovery, that's still mentally restricting, because you've got a goal in mind for the behavior of unrestricted eating. But if you just fully surrender to that and trust the process, you will naturally arrive at a time scale that's right for you, depending on how much you've restricted. Might depend on how much you're in the middle messy where you're only wanting to eat chocolate and you feel shit. You have to go through to the other side. It's the only way.
Always just sit in the suck and
always
come out the other side.
Yeah, sit in the suck, face the fear, beyond fear lies freedom. And let's see, I know we're like almost on time, but let's see if we can speak to this very last question. Quite long question. She says, same person, I'm a parent of a 14-year-old with anorexia. She's currently doing well, that's great, and has regained her weight and is eating well. My question relates to, when does nutrition and health come back into the picture? I get that when she's starving, that any food is good food, but there's no bad food. But I also feel that some foods make us feel energetic, better, physically, mentally. My mental health definitely links with my gut health. Currently, it feels like she's favouring processed foods and snacks and packets of ice cream, etc., all of which is great for rebuilding her weight. But as a parent, I'm now scared to say no to anything. I've read a lot of research about food and the many additives and chemicals, etc., in foods does concern me, not from a weight point of view, but from a long-term health point of view. She also has type 1 diabetes. So while currently it's sure, eat whatever you like, it definitely will over time have an impact on her health. That's a great question, because there's a lot in there. We did speak to a lot of it in the last one with, in terms of allowing. Yeah. As a mum, do you want to speak to the mum aspect of it?
So when you've got children, you are literally fed all this, like, ideals that you're supposed to stick to have healthy children, to give them a healthy future, and you should never allow them to eat junk food, you should never allow them to eat processed food and all this sort of thing. And that messaging is really, really strong, and it's really hard to not follow it. And I know I did follow it for so very long. But I thought I was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
I really did. And that's a whole nother story. But what you feel about yourself and your food and how you feel is so much more damaging than anything you're going to put in your mouth.
Yeah.
The negative thoughts, the stress hormones, is going to be so much more damaging. So keep allowing her to have whatever she wants to have, and encourage the nutrition as well. So again, back to what we just said, allow, have whatever you want, and have stuff to nourish your body.
Yes, exactly.
It's both, and her body will naturally start to settle. She's going through so much at her age, not just recovery, that transition from a child to an adult, the hormones, the everything. Just, it's a massive, massive transitional time of life without an eating disorder. So putting an eating disorder on top is so hard. So just allow and love and compassion, and literally just being, I'm going to love you whatever size you are. I'm going to love you whatever health you are. I'm going to love you because you're you, and that is enough. Mm. And that's the message that she needs to hear. Not worrying about her future or her health, because where she is now is all you need to worry about. The future will unfold and sort itself out if the now is accepted and okay.
And her health now is 1,000 times better than in the anorexia, where she was avoiding foods with chemicals in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, like you said, Julia, any kind of chemicals even, and I'm not a science nutritionist. In fact, I am qualified and certified in the science of nutrition, but I'm not, you know, what I'm even saying here, the chemicals that are in our food, they've had to go through some kind of approval somewhere.
Absolutely, yes.
So it's not like America's not as high level, whatever word I'm looking for, as the UK, I think. Yeah, that one. It's not as they let more in, but still it's got to be approved. So to trust that whatever chemicals she's eating in food is way better than the restriction, living in fear around food, the eating disorder. And the body knows what to do with it. If it doesn't understand what it is, because the body's like fats, proteins, or carbohydrates, and it kind of divides it. If it doesn't know what to do with it, it will just pass it through the body.
Absolutely. And when it comes to health, it covers so many different aspects. But to me, and this is my personal opinion, but the most important health to focus on is your mental health.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have good mental health, no other health matters. You can have the most physically perfect fit body, and if you hate who you are and you have appalling mental health, you've got nothing.
Yeah, true. And if you're in fear of food,
yeah,
you've got nothing. Like my husband, believe it or not, looks at every fucking label. I don't, he does, and he checks for E numbers. So I'm like, oh, for God's sake. Like, and he says, don't you want to know what this E number's doing? And I said, no, because it's, he said, you're living in denial. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. I would rather enjoy the food that is available in our 21st century living on planet Earth than worry and stress and fret and look at labels to try and avoid that. Because at the end of the day, I've had 20 years of eating disorders. I know what it feels like to be in fear around food. So I trust the authorities that are approving food. I listen to my body. And whether or not, yes, I do believe that, I think, you know, Pringles is one of them. Once you pop, you can't stop. There's stuff in them that encourages you to eat more. Your body still knows best. And even if you did eat more because of the chemicals in them that cause you to eat more, what are you going to do? What's the alternative? Restrict or try to restrict, which creates fear and scarcity around food, which will then take you back into the disorder, or go and live on a desert island where there's none. Like, we live in the world we live in, so let's live our life and thrive with great mental health, listening to our body. Our body wants us to feel good. It will guide us.
Yeah. And children quite often can be very picky eaters. I've heard many stories and know parents whose children literally had like 4 or 5 different things that they would eat that was all classed in the like ultra processed food for years and years. And those children are all very healthy, functioning adults now.
Yeah.
And just by allowing them to do their thing when they needed to do their thing, they naturally want to explore. They naturally want to open up the world. And a 14-year-old is very, very different from an 18-year-old to a 25-year-old. And she's going to change.
Yes.
And she will choose how she wants to live her life as she changes.
Yeah. The most important is she's far away from that anorexia. That is the most
absolutely
important thing. So thank you so much for your questions, everybody.
Love it.
We're going to have a chat after this. So we're going to say goodbye on here, but we're going to have our little chit chat. Well, we're going to continue to do these, aren't we?
Definitely. I love doing them.
Yeah, so send questions anytime. Of course, nearer the time, we'll always put a box up so you can send us your questions. But in the meantime, send us them and we'll start banking them. And we'll see you next time, and we love you loads.
Love you all. Bye.